Marisie had read a lot about life in the roughs in her youth and knew what to expect of a stagecoach trip. Boredom, dust, and discomfort. It was wonderful. She had to forcibly keep herself from hanging out the window, as Wayne occasionally did, watching the scenery pass. They weren't in the roughs, but this was close enough. The smell of the horses, the bumps in the road, the rickety creak of the wood in the springs. She had seen and done some remarkable things during her time with Waxillium, but this really felt as if she were living in an adventure. Waxillium reclined across from her, feet up on the seat next to her, a wide-brimmed hat over his eyes, face bristly from a day without shaving. He'd removed his boots, which sat on the floor beside his shotgun. It seemed surreal to remember she'd even considered a relationship with him now that so long had passed with them working together. No, she was not interested. No longer. But she did admire the perfect image of him there. The gun, the boots, and the hat. Of course, that image was distorted by the sight of Steris curled up on the seat beside him, sleeping with her head on his shoulder. In what kind of bizarre world did Marisie's punctilious half-sister end up on the adventure? Steris belonged in a sitting room with a cup of tea and a dry book about horticulture, not riding cross-country in a stagecoach toward a potential army of allomancers. Yet here she was, snuggled up against Dawnshot himself. Marisie shook her head. She wasn't envious of Steris, which was, frankly, remarkable, considering their upbringings. It was very hard to hate Steris. You could be bored by her, confused by her, or frustrated with her. But hate her? Impossible. Marisie got out her notebook and continued her report to Vendel and Constable General Reddy, which she hoped to be able to send before reaching Dulsing. Waxillium shifted, then tipped his hat back, eyeing her.
You should get some sleep.
I'll rest when we stop.
Stop?
Marisie hesitated. They'd been going for half a day already, avoiding the main roads to evade potential pursuers from New Saren. They'd crossed several fields and spent a full hour rattling along a stone ridge to bypass some farms below in a way that left little sign of their passage. Their path lay almost directly northeast of New Saren, skirting the mountains to their right, staying to the foothills, which meant some ups and downs, but this was still good farmland. All of the basin was, even here at the edges, where things were drier than in the center.
I thought that after stopping last night. Dear, you mean to go straight there?
Straight is an odd term, considering how much Milan has us weaving to avoid getting caught. But yes, shouldn't be more than another 4 hours or so.
A train could have had them there in a fraction of that time, delivered in comfort. Maybe the outer cities did have reason to gripe about the way things were set up.
Waxillium?
Hmm?
Do you think they're real? The bands of mourning?
Waxillium tipped back his head all the way.
Did I ever tell you why I went to the roughs?
As a youth? It was because you hated the politics, the expectations, polite society that was anything but polite.
That's why I left Ellendale. But why the roughs? I could have gone to one of the outer cities. Could have found a plantation somewhere to read books and live a quiet life.
Well, I guess I thought you always wanted to be a lawman.
I wish I'd spotted it that easily. Should have. I spent my childhood telling on other children for every little thing they did.
Then what?
He settled back, closing his eyes.
I was chasing a legend, Marisie. Tales of the survivor's gold. Riches to be had. Stories to be made.
You? You were a gentleman adventurer?
You make me sound like that fool in the broadsheets. I tell you, Marisie, those first months were hard. Every other town was full of the unemployed from the mines shutting down, and I couldn't enter a saloon without finding some baby-faced fool like myself, up from the basin with a head full of glory and treasure.
So you started hunting bounties. You told me this part. Something about boots?
Eventually, yes. Struggled for a long time up there before turning to bounties. At first, though, I had my eyes full of riches and gold. Took time to shake that out of me, but even then, becoming a lawman was about the cash. Started hunting men for money, and, well, there'd always been this streak in me that didn't like seeing people get pushed around. Ended up in Weathering. Just another forgotten, dried-out city in the roughs with nobody to care about it. It was 6 years before someone gave me credentials and made it official. When Vendel told us about this, I didn't want the bands to be real.
Waxillium looked out the window.
I hated the thought of some foolish dream pulling me away again after I'd finally found stability in Ellendale. I didn't want that lure of excitement, the reminder of a world I'd come to love out there in the dust.
So you think they are real?
Here's the thing. My uncle hasn't had time to breed his allomancers, as I suspect he's been doing. The plans he and the set have concocted, they're long-term investments. But he promised something to Kelesina, and he really sounded like he thinks he can deliver. You have the device?
Marisi pulled the small metal cube from her purse. Waxillium fished in his pocket and brought out his coin, the one some beggar had apparently given him. He held up the two next to each other, sunlight through the window gleaming off the cube and highlighting the otherworldly symbols on its sides.
Something strange is going on, Marisi. Something important enough to draw my uncle's attention. I don't have the answers. I need to find them.
It's not the treasure hunter that made you go to Dulsing. It's the detective.
You were listening to what Melan said to me last night?
Marisi nodded.
You were supposed to be asleep.
Waxillium flipped the coin, caught it, then tossed the cube back to her.
Going to Aridel would have been the mature, prudent move, but I have to find the answers. And who knows? Maybe the bands are real. If so, then getting them away from Soot is at least as important as informing the governor of what happened in New Saren.
You think your uncle is trying to make allomancers with technology, rather than by birth?
A frightening power in the hands of a man like my uncle. Get some sleep. We're probably going to infiltrate this building project in Dulsing during the night.
Waxillium settled with his hat over his eyes again. Marisi felt she should do as he said, and so tried to doze off. Unfortunately, there were too many thoughts in her head for sleep. After some time, she gave up and returned to the letter. In it, she explained what they'd done and discovered. She needed to send this soon. Perhaps she could find a telegraph station when they changed horses and send the letter in time for it to make a difference. Once done with the letter, she moved to her notes about the missing Chondra spike. Kelesina, acting on behalf of the Set, had tried to kill R'hllor and had assumed success. When Soot had demanded proof, she'd ordered the spike dug up and sent to him in Dulsing. But where would it be kept there? Someplace secure, presumably. How in the world was she going to find it? She held up the little cube. Soot had asked after this. Could she use that somehow? Marisi frowned, turning the cube. The sides had little grooves between them. She looked closer, and in the sunlight spotted something she hadn't seen before. A tiny little knob hidden in one groove. It looked like, well, a switch, nestled in where it couldn't be flipped accidentally. She used a hairpin to reach in and flip the switch. It moved just as she'd expect it to. A switch. It seemed so mundane. This was either a mystical relic or some kind of secret technology. You didn't use a switch on things like that. You held them up to starlight, or spoke the special command phrases, or did a dance on the last day of the month while eating a kumquat. The switch didn't seem to have done anything, so Marisi swallowed and burned a pinch of cadmium. The cube began to vibrate in her fingers. Then the entire coach lurched. Marisi hit her head on the roof, then was slammed back down onto her seat. Melan somehow kept the horses under control.
The hell was that?
Waxillium hauled himself up off the floor where he had ended up in a jumble with Steris. Marisi sat up, holding her head.
I did something stupid.
How stupid?
I was testing the device and used allomancy.
Wayne's head appeared at the door a moment later, hanging down from above.
Was that a speed bubble?
Yes.
That jolt damn near killed the horses.
I'm sorry.
Waxillium helped Steris sit up.
What went wrong?
Marisi used a speed bubble while we were moving. We hit the threshold and towed her out of it, popping the thing and lurching us from one time frame to the next.
But she used it on the train.
Speed bubbles move with you if you're on something massive enough. Otherwise, the spinning of the planet would pop you out of every one you made. The train was heavy and fast. The stagecoach is small and just slow enough. So?
So I should have known better. I haven't done that since I was a kid. But Waxillium, it buzzed.
What?
The cube, it...
Marcy realized she'd dropped the cube in the confusion. She searched around frantically before finally locating it near his foot. She held it up triumphantly.
It had a switch.
A switch?
She turned it to the side, showing them the little switch.
You have to slip something small in it to move it. But it works now.
Waxillium looked at it, baffled, then showed it to Steris, who squinted.
What kind of eldritch device has an on switch?
Makes sense, I guess. You don't want your eldritch devices turning on accidentally.
Might end up almost killing your stagecoach drivers.
It didn't stop your allomancy, Marcy?
She shook her head. She could still sense her metal reserves.
It didn't seem to do anything.
Huh.
Waxillium held the cube up.
Could be dangerous.
So we're testing it, then?
Of course we are, but away from the coach.
Wax held the vibrating cube in his hand. It did respond to his metal burning, but didn't seem to do anything else. They'd stopped near a stand of towering walnut trees, and Wayne was filling his pockets while Marcy watched Wax experiment from a safe distance. Milan watered the horses at a stream down the way. Nearby, a field of carrots grew with green sprouts, completely uncultivated. The air smelled fresh, of life untouched. He held up the buzzing cube and let his metals die off. The cube stopped vibrating. He burned them again, and it responded. But what did it do? Why didn't it blank his allomancy, as it had on the train?
Maybe it doesn't work on the person activating it.
That would make some kind of sense, though he couldn't fathom how it could tell.
Hey, Wayne.
Yeah, mate?
Catch.
Wax tossed the cube to him. Wayne caught it, then jumped as his belt, which held his metal vials and any coins on his person, ripped free from its breakaway straps and sprang away from him. He turned, watching it flop to the ground a good 20 feet down the hill. And when he approached it, it scooted away. Wax ran toward him, and as he did, the shotgun in his leg holster pressed backward as if being pushed. The effect wore off a few seconds later, but by the time he reached Wayne, the cube had stopped buzzing.
Whoa.
Wayne held it up.
What was that?
Wax plucked the device from his fingers as Marcy rushed over to join them.
It doesn't steal allomancy, Wayne. It never did.
But
it takes the metal one is burning and somehow extends it. You saw. It pushed your metal away as if a coin shot were there near you. The cube used allomancy.
The three of them stood stunned, looking at the little device.
We need to try it again. Wayne, hold this and burn your bend alloy. Marcy, go stand over there. Wayne, once you're ready, throw the cube to her.
They did as directed. Wax stood back. When Wayne ignited his metals, he suddenly became a blur inside his speed bubble. The cube zipped out an eye blink later and soared through the air toward Marcy, deflected somewhat, but still moving in the right direction. It engaged just before reaching her, and she became a blur, zipping over to pick up the cube, then zipping back. It took a count of 10 before the cube stopped working, dropping her into ordinary time.
Did you see that?
Marcy held the cube.
It created a speed bubble for me. It fed off Wayne's allomancy and replicated it.
It's what we've been looking for, then?
Wayne joined them, having dropped his own bubble.
Not quite.
Wax took the cube and held it up.
But it's certainly encouraging. It looks like you have to be an allomancer to use this. It doesn't grant new powers, but it does extend the ones you have. It's like an allomantic grenade.
Marcy nodded eagerly.
Which means that the man on the train, the one who used this on us, is a leecher. He can remove allomancy in others, and he gave that power to the cube, which he threw at you.
It engages a second or so after you throw it. Useful.
And it's proof that Suit has technology he's been hiding.
We knew that from the communication device, but yes, this is even more curious. I'm half tempted to think all this talk of the Bands of Mourning came from rumors about this technology the set has been developing.
And the symbols?
No idea. Some kind of cipher they developed?
He tapped the cube, then handed the thing to Marcy.
Why me?
It's yours. You found it. You figured out how to turn it on. Besides, I have a feeling it's going to be the most effective in your hands.
She held it a moment, then her eyes widened. Being a pulser wasn't very useful when you were catching yourself in a bubble where you moved slowly compared to everyone else. However, if you could trap someone else in that bubble...
I'll try not to lose it.
Marcy tucked the device away.
We'll need to study it later. Find out how it works.
I wonder.
Wax remembered something else. He played his hunch, reaching into his pocket and fishing out the golden bracelet that Kelesina had been wearing. He tossed it to Wayne.
Huh. What's this?
Wayne held it up toward the sky.
Oh, pretty hoop of gold, that is. Who'd you trade this off of? I could use this, mate. It would make a nice metal mind.
I think it's already one.
Huh?
What?
It is a metal mind. Damn me, but it is. And I can sense it. Wax, you got your knife?
Wax nodded, yanking his knife from his gun belt, and when Wayne proffered his hand, he sliced a small cut along the back. It resealed immediately.
Mate, it is someone else's metal mind, but I can use it.
Like Vendel said.
Wax took the bracelet from Wayne's fingers.
A metal mind with no identity. Rusts. I have to flare my metal to even get the faintest line pointing to it. This thing must be stuffed full of power.
More than any metal mind he'd ever sensed, in fact. He could usually push on those without too much trouble. He'd barely been able to shift this one.
Why didn't I notice what it was immediately? I had to be told. And, oh, rusts, this is proof of the bands of mourning, ain't it?
No, I can't sense a reserve in the bracelet. I can't use this, as I'm not a blood maker. It's not a metal mind anybody can use. Just one that anyone with the right powers already can use.
That's still remarkable.
And disturbing.
Wax stared at that innocent-looking loop. The only way to have created this would involve using a ferrochemist with two powers. So, either the set had access to full-blooded ferrochemists, or his fears were coming true. They'd figured out how to use hemallergy.
Or it's a relic.
There was that possibility. Perhaps this and the box were artifacts of another time. Wax tossed the bracelet back to Wayne.
How much is in it?
A heap. But it's not endless. The reservoir got smaller when I healed that cut.
Hang on to it, then.
Hey, Wax!
Wax turned. Milan was at the edge of the glade, waving. Wax left Wayne and Marisi, striding over to the tall, slender Chondra woman, still worried about what these discoveries meant. What did the bracelet indicate? Was there more to be discovered? Metal mines that granted anyone who touched them incredible powers? For the first time, he really started to wonder, what if the bands were real? What would happen to society if metal-born powers were simply something you could purchase? He trudged up to Milan.
I think you'll want to see this.
Milan waved for him to follow her up the side of a steep hill covered in foliage. At the top, they had a view of the land to the northeast. Some was cultivated in rows and rings, but much was like what they'd just left, wilderness blooming with random patches of fruits or vegetables. A cool breeze blew across him, barely enough to temper the heat of the sunlight above. Seeing it all, feeling that perfect breeze, made Wax realize what annoyed him so much about the problems between Ellendale and the outer cities. Did these people comprehend what life was like out in the roughs, where planting was fraught with uncertainty and the danger of starvation was real?
They think people are foolish for living in the roughs.
Wax took the old-fashioned spyglass that Milan handed him.
They don't understand what it's like to get trapped out there for generations, too poor or too stubborn to return to the basin.
Freedom in the roughs came at a cost. Either way, the basin was literally paradise. Crafted for men by a god who wanted to compensate the world for a millennium of ashes and ruin. It seemed that even in paradise, men would find reasons to squabble and fight. Wax raised the spyglass.
What am I looking for?
Check the road about a mile up, by that creek with the bridge over it.
He spotted a couple of men lounging in a field with axes. From the looks of it, they'd been cutting at the trunk of a dead tree. Another fallen tree crossed the roadway.
What do you see?
Huh. A roadblock that doesn't want to look like one. That tree across the road is arranged to seem as if it just fell there. But the furrows on the ground indicate it was dragged there intentionally and has been moved a time or two since being placed.
Good eye.
You can't have it.
Wax turned the spyglass and looked toward the farmsteads in the area.
Soldiers stationed in that farmhouse over there, I'd guess. And none of the other homes have smoke rising from them. Probably abandoned. You're unlikely to find a farmstead this time of day without dinner in the oven.
They're waiting for us?
No, this is too extensive for that. This is a perimeter. They're trying not to have it look like one to prevent the word from spreading, but they've cordoned off this entire area. What the hell is happening in there?
Milan shook her head, looking baffled.
Well, we can't take the coach any farther.
Wax handed back the spyglass.
How are you at bareback?
Well, I haven't thrown any riders off recently, but I don't get occasion to be a horse very often, so I can't say how I'll feel today.
Wax blinked.
Oh, you meant riding. Yeah, I'm fine. I doubt I'm the one you'll have to worry about.
Milan nodded back towards Steris, walking into the grove, trailed by Wayne, who had filled his hat with walnuts.
Right.
Hopefully, some of their horses would prove docile. Twilight settled upon the land fitfully, like a tired eye struggling to stay open. It was the variety of the land down here in the south, Wax figured. One moment, you could be riding through a wooded hollow, all in shadow, and the next you'd crest a hill into an open field and find that the sun hadn't quite dropped below the horizon yet. Still, darkness did eventually arrive, but with it came no mists. Wax realized he'd been longing to feel them envelop him again. Milan led the sortie, keeping to forested areas when possible. She or Wayne would scout ahead, listening for patrols, but the set was attempting to hold such a large area that they obviously couldn't watch the whole wilderness. Marcy, of course, was an accomplished rider and seemed pleased to have a reason to change into her new constable's trousers and jacket. Steris surprised him. She did just fine, even riding in a skirt. She'd packed one full enough that she could tuck it beneath her and ride bareback without exposing too much. She took to it without complaint, as she'd done with practically everything else on this trip. The few farmsteads or hunters' camps they passed on their ride were empty. Wax felt a mounting disquiet. Yes, this was a small, largely unpopulated region in the basin's backwaters, but it was still profoundly disturbing that the set could dominate it so fully. Once they reached the final patch of trees near the village, Milan scouted ahead, then came back and waved for him to follow. He crawled up with her to peer at the village from the tree line. Bright electric floodlights lit the perimeter around an enormous structure in what obviously had once been the center of the village of Dulsing. Wooden, windowless, huge, it was still under construction, judging by the scaffolding at the sides and the unfinished roof at the top. The town's buildings had mostly been torn down, leaving only a few at the perimeter untouched. The roofless top of the building glowed with a warm light. Where were they getting so much electricity? Milan handed him the spyglass and he raised it, inspecting the perimeter. Those were definitely soldiers, wearing red uniforms with some mark on the breast that wasn't distinguishable at this distance. They carried rifles at their shoulders, and the floodlights created a bright ring around the place. Focused outward, not toward the building, which left plenty of shadowed areas inside that ring. So they'd have cover once they got past the perimeter.
What do you think? Is that some kind of bunker?
It doesn't look like any fort I've seen. With those flimsy walls, looks more like a big warehouse.
A warehouse as large as a small town. Wax shook his head in bafflement, then spotted something near the far side of the village. A waterfall? It was outside the lights, but he thought he could see mist rising from where it plunged down, and a small stream did run through the village.
High ground that direction.
Yeah, the maps mention the waterfall over there. Small but pretty, supposedly.
Must have hooked a turbine up to it. That's where the power is coming from. Let's get back to the others.
They crawled through the underbrush again to where Wayne, Marcy, and Steris waited in the dim woods.
They're here, all right. We have to find a way to get in. Tons of soldiers, well-guarded perimeter.
Fly in?
Not gonna work. Wax said they had a seeker back at the party. You think they won't have one here? The moment one of us burns a metal, we'll draw 100 astute goons to welcome us with a handshake and a friendly bit of murdering.
What then?
I need to see.
There's a better vantage on the other side, we think.
Wax pointed, and Milan led the way in the darkness, walking her horse between the towering hardwoods. Wax fell in with Steris at the tail of the group and lagged a little to be able to speak with her privately.
Steris, I've been considering how to proceed once we decide how to infiltrate. I've thought about bringing you in with us, and I just don't see that it's feasible. I think it would be best if you stayed and watched the horses.
Very well.
No, really. These are armed soldiers. I can't even fathom how I'd feel if I brought you in there and something happened. You need to stay out here.
Very well.
It isn't subject to... Wait. You all right with this?
Why wouldn't I be? I barely have any sense of where to point a gun and have hardly any capacity for sneaking. That's really quite a scandalous talent if you think about it, Lord Waxillium. While I do believe that people tend to be safest when near you, riding into an enemy compound is stretching the issue.
I'll stay here.
Steris, you're a gem.
What? Because I have a moderately healthy sense of self-preservation?
Let's just say that out in the roughs, I was accustomed to people always wanting to try things beyond their capacity, and they always seemed determined to do it right when it was the most dangerous.
Well, I shall endeavor to stay out of sight and not get captured.
I doubt you need to worry about that all the way out here.
Oh, I agree, but that is the sort of statistical anomaly that plagues my life, so I'll plan for it nonetheless.
With some difficulty, they navigated to the eastern edge of the town, where they left Steris and the horses. Wax dug some supplies off the pack animal. Metal vials, extra bullets, plenty of guns, including the aluminum one he'd stolen back at Kelesina's place, and the last of Renette's ball and string devices, which he tucked into the pouch on his gun belt. After climbing up some switchbacks, they were able to settle onto a darkened ridge above the falls, which were nowhere near as impressive as he'd imagined, and studied the town. Well, the remnants of it.
I wish we could see into that building.
Marcy handed back the spyglass. They were almost high enough to see what was going on inside. Certainly those flickering lights bespoke considerable activity. People moving down below, passing before the lights in the large chamber. But what were they doing? And why were they still at it well into the night?
Gonna be hard to sneak in there.
You could kill one of the guards for me. I'd eat him, take his shape, and slip us in that way.
Wax blinked, then glanced at Marcy, who seemed sick.
Really, you all need to stop staring at me like that when I offer pragmatic suggestions.
It's not pragmatic. It's cannibalism.
Technically, it's not, as we're different species. Honestly, if you look at our physiology, I share less in common with humans than you do with a cow, and nobody gasps when you eat one of those. You didn't have trouble with it back at the mansion with Innate's bodyguard.
She was already dead. Thank you for the suggestion, Melon, but getting you a guard's body is out of the question.
We don't like killing folks. At least unless they start shooting at us. They're just chaps what are doing their job.
Wayne looked to Marcy as if for support.
Don't look at me. I'm reeling from watching you trying to take the moral high ground.
Focus, Wayne. How are we going to get in? Shall we try a fat belt?
Nah, too loud. I think we should do spoiled tomato.
Dangerous. I'd have to do the placement just right between the lit perimeter and the shadowed part near the walls.
You can do it. You make shots like that all the time. Plus, we got this shiny new metal mine full of health waiting to be slurped up.
A mistake could ruin the whole infiltration, healing power or no. I think we should do duck under clouds instead.
You kidding? Didn't you get shot last time we tried that?
Kinda.
Milan stared at them, baffled.
Duck under clouds?
They get like this. Best not to listen too closely.
Tube run.
No glue.
Painfielder?
Too dark.
Blackwatch double stomp.
The hell is that?
Just made it up. It's a nifty codename though, eh?
Not bad. And what type of plan is it?
Same as spoiled tomato.
I said that was too dangerous.
What? Nothing else will work. Look, are we gonna sit here arguing, or are we gonna do this?
Wax debated for a moment, eyeing the grounds, thinking. Could he get the placement right? But then, did he have a better plan? That perimeter was very well guarded, but it was a dark night. If his life in the roughs had taught him one thing, it was to trust his instincts. Unfortunately, at that moment, they agreed with Wayne. So before he could talk himself out of it, he pulled his shotgun from its holster and tossed it to Wayne. The shorter man caught it with distaste. Guns and Wayne didn't agree. His arms immediately started shaking.
Try to hold on tight. Make an opening on the north side if you can.
Wax increased his weight, flared his metal, and pushed on the gun. He used it as an anchor to hurl Wayne out off the rocky outcropping and over the camp. The man soared from the push before dropping through the darkness some 50 feet toward the ground below.
Spoiled tomato?
Yeah. Apparently it makes a mess sometimes when he lands.
To rust with that wax.
Wayne plummeted toward the ground, his hat blowing off.
Tossing a gun to a fella without even warning him. Why, that's just...
Now, there was a trick to falling to your death. Bodies hitting the ground were loud, louder than anyone ever expected. He mitigated this by hitting feet first. His legs both snapped immediately, then twisted onto his side, breaking his shoulder, but dampening some of the sound by rolling with the impact. He tapped his fancy new metal mind right before his head smacked the ground, dazing him. He ended up in a crumpled, broken heap beside a pile of rocks. Of course, Wax would have sent him into a pile of rocks. As his vision cleared, he tried to glance at his legs, but he couldn't move. Couldn't feel anything, actually, which was quite pleasant. It was always nice when you snapped the spine. It helped with the pain. Not that the pain went completely away, mind you. But he and Payne were old friends that shared a handshake and a beer now and then. Didn't much like one another, but they had a working relationship. Sensation and agony flooded back into him as his metal mind healed his spine, focusing on the worst wounds first. As soon as he could move, even while his legs were healing, he twisted and used his good arm to position one of the large rocks in the pile. It looked like these stones were here intended for shoring up the sides of the stream, perhaps to make a pathway across. Wayne put them to good use, reaching up with his other hand as his shoulder healed. Wax had placed him well, right in the dark area between the perimeter watch posts and the building. But that didn't mean he was safe. Wayne stumbled to his feet, dragging Wax's gun, his leg twisting about and bones re-knitting. Damn fine metal mine, that gold bracelet was. An extensive healing like this would have cost him months of saving up, but this metal mine was still mostly full. He stumbled away as quietly as he could, leaving a large rock balanced on the others as he sought a place deeper in the shadows, then hid the gun near the building so his damn hand would stop shaking. He got away none too soon. Two soldiers were approaching from the perimeter.
It was over here.
As they drew closer, one of the spotlights turned around and shone in the area, giving them light and quite nearly exposing Wayne. He froze in the shadows near a pile of work equipment, sweating as his toes knit back to their proper places. The guards didn't hear. They stepped up to where he'd fallen, no tomato splat of blood this time, fortunately, and looked around. One nudged the stone accidentally, and it fell off the peak where Wayne had placed it, rolling down the side of the small pile and hitting against the other rocks. The men looked at it, then nodded, doing a quick sweep, but heading back to their post and returning the light to its scan of the nearby area. The noise they'd heard had merely been some rock shifting, nothing significant. Wayne stood up straight in the darkness and stopped tapping the bracelet metal mind. He felt good, renewed, like he always did after a big healing. Felt like he could do something impossible, run up a mountain, or eat the entire boar and chips plate at Findlay's all on his own. He crept off through the shadows, going about important business. Fortunately, he found his hat almost immediately near another rock pile. That done, he moved on to less important matters, like making an opportunity to help the others sneak in. Wax had said north side.
Let's see.
He kept close to the building and even resisted the urge to go sneaking in on his own to find out what in ruin's name was in there.
Time to think like a guard.
It was hard, as he didn't have a guard's hat. After about 15 minutes of watching, he picked out a likely candidate and kept pace as the man did his rounds, though Wayne stayed in the shadow. The lanky fellow had a face like a rabbit, but was tall enough he could probably have picked all the walnuts he wanted without needing a stepladder. The man turned to go back the other way on his rounds, but someone walked up to him and started saying something Wayne couldn't hear. When the man started on his way again, Wayne turned and slinked along in the shadows, still keeping pace with him. Wayne smiled, then scuttled ahead of the man, looking for something he'd stepped over earlier. A set of black cords, each as thick as his finger, plugged into a big box near the building. As the guard came strolling past, not paying much attention, Wayne carefully lifted the cords. The guard's foot caught on them. In that moment, Wayne yanked them from the hub. The floodlights nearest to him went out.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I wasn't watching my feet.
Wayne slipped away and found a nice quiet nook between two stacks of sandbags as the guards argued and the poor man was chewed out. Some people came in to fix the cords, though Wayne had tossed them to the side, so it took some time searching in the dark to find the ends and get them connected. The lights came back on. Wayne was taking a long swig from his leather canteen as Wax, Marisi, and Milan joined him in the shadows.
Nice. It wasn't, actually. It was pretty mean. That poor guard ain't done nothing wrong, and everybody keeps yelling at him.
Wax took the lead at that point, prowling along the side of the big barn-like building. The roof wasn't the only thing still unfinished. The entrances were open, not fitted with proper doors. They stopped beside one, and Wayne pointed to where Wax's shotgun was. Wax fetched it, then snuck through the doorway. They followed, Wayne last of all. The cavernous interior was lit by a few electric lanterns here and there, and they passed a long light lattice that was obviously going to be installed in the ceiling once the roof was done. It was brighter than outside in here, but not by much, and there were stacks of boxes and supplies arranged in rows, which let them sneak through and stay hidden. Once they got to the front of the rows of boxes, Wax hesitated, and the two women peered around him. Nobody gave Wayne a good view, which was how it always went. He wiggled between them, getting a good elbow into Marcy's midriff, which earned him a glare, as if she didn't know that proper crowd-wiggling protocol involved getting friendly with one another's extremities. He managed to peek between Wax and Melan, finally getting a glimpse at what had stopped them. It was a boat. Of course, the common word boat didn't do the thing justice. Wayne stared at the massive construction, searching for a better description, one that would capture the majesty, the incredible scale of the thing he was seeing.
That's a damn big boat.
Much better. Why would they be building a ship here, miles and miles from the ocean? The thing couldn't be easy to move. It filled almost the entire building, with a curved bottom and a prow, unfinished on one side, that was easily three stories high. The thing had two long arm-like extensions at the sides. Pontoons? They were big, and one wasn't finished yet, ending in a jagged line of construction. Jagged? Wayne frowned. That didn't look like the way you built something. In fact, now that he studied it, that prow looked more crumpled than unfinished.
Someone broke it. They were trying to move it and cracked off one pontoon.
It has to be a warship. They are preparing for a war.
I think Wayne is right. Look at the gouges in the dirt, the damage to the hull. They were transporting this thing through here and it rolled free and cracked. So the Set constructed this building to cut it off from the view of anyone outside while they repair it.
Engineers.
Wayne pointed at some people who were obviously smart types, walking along the outside of the ship and pointing, carrying clipboards, and wearing dark brown suits and skirts. The type teachers at schools would wear, thinking they were the height of fashion.
It's not like any ship I've seen.
Marcy shouldered her purse and clutched her rifle.
You brought your purse on a Darren infiltration?
Why not? Purses are handy. Anyway, if the Set has technology like that speaking telegraph, what will they put on a ship like this? And why did they build it away from the sea in the first place?
Suit will have answers. Marcy, I assume you're still after the spike?
Yes.
I'm gonna find my uncle. Who do you want, Wayne or Melan?
Melan this time.
Stay hidden. But if Wayne and I get spotted, try to help. We'll do the same for you. If you find that spike, return to this point and lie low. If all goes well, we'll slip back out together.
And if all doesn't go well?
Which it won't.
Meet back where we left Steris and the horses.
Wax slid a gun from the holster at his side. Melan did the same, only her holster was her leg. Like the skin split, and she reached in through a slit in her trousers and slipped the gun out. A sleek, long-barreled thing. Melan grinned, then gave Wayne a kiss.
Try not to get shot too many times.
You neither.